to the Ted Gunderson Intelligence Report with former FBI Chief Ted L. Gunderson. To join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-97... And now, here's Ted.
Good morning to all you beautiful people across this great land of ours, the United States of America. We have to keep working and fighting. Stay free. How important it is that we work together. And today, my guest, Chip Tatum, is back by popular demand. Folks, he gave us information when he was here on the 23rd of April. It should have shocked anybody, even a veteran like me who's been involved in this business for 48-some years. And on the 23rd of April, he gave us information, I think, that many of you never heard or never knew of. He talked about Operation Red Rock. He talked about the Pegasus hit team. He talked about how he was charged with treason. He talked about his exploits and his experiences as a 25-year CIA deep cover agent. And in the Nexus magazine, April and May 1997, I'm going to read the first paragraph. This tells it all about Chip Tatum. Veteran Special Forces Air Combat Controller, 25-year CIA deep cover agent, U.S. Army pilot flying classified missions during the U.S. invasion of Grenada, Iran-Contra pilot flying cocaine shipments labeled as medical supplies, and member of the ultra-secret international G7-run Pegasus hit team. This is the extraordinary story of Gene Chip Tatum. Welcome to the show again, Chip.
Thank you, Ted. Pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. Now, folks, we're going to have a series of six shows. We've already had one on the 23rd. We have one today, and we'll have a series for the next 4 days, a total of six shows, 12 hours, and if you want this tape, and I strongly urge you to get a copy of this tape and make copies. I hope that the studio there in Colorado doesn't mind me saying that, but make copies. We've got to get the word out. You can have 12 hours of recording, and this is without the commercials, for $49.95, and in order to obtain your order, you must call 800-205-6245, 800-205-6245. $49, and I would assume you make that payable to American Freedom Network. If there's any difference on how you make that check payable to anybody else, let me know, folks. They're in the studio. And so you don't want to miss this. Be sure to listen to the next five shows, including today, and obtain a copy of your tape. Now, for those of you who only hear the first hour, this is a two-hour show, I will summarize the information the next day of the second hour for those of you in the first hour. And, of course, you can also, as I said, buy a copy of the tape, the 12-hour tape. So we'll make sure that you're aware of everything or nearly everything that Chip Tatum tells us. Chip, how have you been since we were on the show last time?
Very busy.
I bet you have. You've done some other shows, haven't you?
I'm currently doing about the 3 to 4 shows a day, Ted.
Oh, fantastic. And where are these? They're going all over the United States, all over the world, what?
All over the United States.
All right. Well, we need to get the word out. Did you contact my source in Mexico that I gave to you, or did they return the call yet?
I've contacted the source. I haven't received a return call yet. You know, the information is pretty damning, and especially the information I have that includes a lot of Mexican officials.
I know that, and maybe you'll never hear back from him, by the way. That's the way it goes. We have to take your chances. I can understand why people be concerned, because there have been a number of journalists who have been murdered in Mexico, as I recall. And this was a member of the journalism industry or print media down there in Mexico. Chip, let's go over kind of a couple of items that we talked about last on the 23rd. What about this Pegasus group? What is the Pegasus group? Now, you told us they were spies on spies, right?
Initially, I think Pegasus was formed as a group to keep an eye on the intelligence community. Then it evolved into a little more. You know, the intelligence community grew to not only keeping an eye on the intelligence community, but gathering information on politicians on certain committees, so that if the needs be, there was enough information there to approach those people on behalf of the president and twist their arm, I guess.
How would that approach be?
I have no idea. On the intelligence side, we would simply supply the information on that. Then in 1981, there was a National Security Decision Directive 3 was signed by President Reagan, which put intelligence in a completely new light. It took what we knew as intelligence, the intelligence community, and placed all intelligence assets under the Vice President of the United States.
Well, that was George Bush. Of course, he was running the country anyway.
That's right. But he wanted total control on the books, too.
And what say you had some information on a politician, and you wanted him to... Are you saying that you'd go in there and influence his vote?
No, not my section, no. We were international. I didn't deal in that. But from what I understand, that was done earlier in the Pegasus group. As time went on, I didn't join the unit until 1986. In 1986, our mission was completely different. It was an international mission. We had Turkish intelligence, Danish intelligence, British intelligence, and Israeli intelligence working in what I'm calling Pegasus with us.
Well, let's go back at the beginning. Let's dissect this Pegasus group. I find this very fascinating, very interesting. When was it established? Was it, would it be 1981, or was it prior to 1981?
No, I think it was right after World War II. Some of the old fellas in there had been around for quite some time.
And what was their mission?
Their mission at the time was to spy on spies.
Now, this is the Pegasus group. It's the group within the CIA, right?
That's correct.
So it's kind of like the Freemasonry, the secret society within a secret society.
Right. And, kind of like the secret government within the government.
Government within the shadow government.
That's correct.
An arm of the shadow government within the government itself. And they're... Oops, these breaks are going to come around real fast, folks. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report. We'll be right back. Skip Tatum.
Join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. Or in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And we're back. My guest today is Chip Tatum. Gene Chip Tatum. Where'd you come up with a nickname, Chip? Was that from childhood?
It is. My first name was Deuce, and I was a junior. My cousin's first name was Dorsey, and he was a junior. And my aunt, not my mother or his mother, said, these boys can't go through life as Deuce and Dorsey, so she nicknamed us Chip and Skip.
Excellent. Okay, I like that. Okay, we were going back. We're going to dissect the Pegasus group. They were formed back right after World War II, a mission to spy on the spies. And what did evolve out of that, and when did it happen?
Well, you know, the old OSS was done away with right after World War II, and it was evolved into a central intelligence gathering unit because all U.S. intelligence was never filtered into one central agency. It was all their personal or their individual property, and they didn't share that property. So, you know, intelligence really wasn't being shared between the military intelligence, defense intelligence, FBI intelligence. It was all absolutely separate, maintained separate. So the idea was to put together a centralized agency. That's the Central Intelligence Agency. That man who runs the Central Intelligence Agency, the director of Central Intelligence, is the man who's responsible for collating all this intelligence data, analyzing it, and disseminating that back out. But it doesn't quite work like that, as I'm sure you understand, Ted. You know, the FBI intelligence network really doesn't trust the central intelligence people, and the central intelligence people don't trust the military intelligence people, and so the sharing really doesn't go on. The president wanted someone that he could trust, so he formed his own small group of operatives, which he called Pegasus. These were the people who worked and communicated their information directly to the president of the United States. Pegasus maintained their position with the president until just after the Kennedy assassination, and then they were taken, I would say they were taken AWOL from the president's direct control and put more in an international position along with the Johnson and Nixon administrations.
Well, now, what about the National Security Council? Now, folks, NSC, there's NSA, National Security Agency, which really is responsible for communications primarily around the world, wiretaps and all that sort of thing, and monitoring communications, international phone calls. And now there's the National Security Council, and that's directly under the White House. It's right out of the White House, not answerable to Congress. What about them? Where did they fall into this intelligence picture?
Well, today, the NSC are the ones who oversee the... who handle the Special Situation Group, Terrorist Incident Working Group, and the operational subgroups, which is actually Pegasus.
So NSC, National Security Council, operates the Pegasus Group. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Is everybody that belongs to the Pegasus Group part of the NSC?
No, simply because members of the Pegasus Group also come from MI6, Mossad, and other intelligence agencies. We answer, our orders will come from... NSC leaders for on the U.S. side, if a U.S. Intelligence agent is involved in a neutralization or in a mission. However, those missions can be asked for. Maggie Thatcher can say, I want this done and I want it done now, and even though she's not an active politician, you can bet your bottom dollar it would be done.
Even though she's no longer in power, huh?
Well, she's in power.
But she's in power, but not by title.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
She's in power by virtue of a group of international financiers and international politicians that carry most of the power in the world today.
And now, this National Security Council, NSC, this has always been interesting to me. Say, let's not be naive. Let's not say that the CIA has not been involved in assassinations. You and I know they have for years. What if, that the President of the United States wants to overthrow a particular government, which they've done in the past? I'd hate to count the number of governments they've overthrown. Would that come from the President or the Vice President down to National Security Council, from there on out to the CIA and the Pegasus Group?
It probably, in some sort of a relevance there, would be. Normally, it's done directly to the OSGs. This is what we want to do. There are three existing OSGs. One handles arms, one handles terrorists, and one handles neutralization.
What is OSG?
Operating subgroup, operational subgroup.
Are they part of Pegasus?
They are Pegasus.
Okay, so the Pegasus is the same thing as operational subgroup, huh?
That's right.
Okay, how many members are there in Pegasus?
Operational subgroup 2, we had about 80 operatives.
There are certainly more in the Pegasus group than 80 operatives, aren't there? Or is that it? Is it a very elite group like that?
Now, you have to understand, operatives are full-time people. Now an operative sets up their own intelligence network. Myself, as an operative, I could have people that I could contract to do any number of things. So, you know, active operatives, that's a lot of active operatives in the field. The Mossad has about 25 active Kachas in the field at one time.
Okay, so we're looking at 80 operatives who all each sets up his own intelligence group. Who supervises what those 80 operatives do? In other words, time for music again, folks. Ted Gunderson Intelligence Report. Be right back. We're dissecting the Pegasus Group.
Oh, here's Ted.
And we're back. My guest today is Chip Tatum. Chip, 25-year veteran CIA. Chip, you're one of 80 operatives. You set up your own intelligence group. Who supervises what you do and your people that are under you?
We have a unit commander. That unit commander is in charge of the OSG. I supervise my people. They are independent networks, and we compartmentalize them so one doesn't know who the other is. If we need specialists, if we need an archer team, that's the assassination teams for something, we will task for an archer team, and those will be assigned. I probably only flew, out of 18 archer missions, I as the pilot, I only flew the same guy maybe three times.
What is an archer mission?
Our archers are our team assassination teams.
Okay.
They're the men that go in and take care of the business.
My
job primarily is a special ops, and my forte, I can fly anything into any area and never be caught. They'd never know I was there.
How can you fly a big airplane into a country and never get caught? And where would you land it when you get in there?
Not necessarily a big airplane. It could be something small. It could be, you know, there are many different ways to do what needs to be done. The mission would come down, then I would decide what type of aircraft we would use for the mission.
All right, so you're in a small airplane. Can you get in and out, avoid radar, and land? You'd have to know ahead of time where to land, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that all has to be planned. That's why rotary wing is ideal, except the rotary wing mission is restricted restricted by fuel loads.
Okay. We've overthrown governments through the CIA for years now, and who makes the decision as to whether or not a certain government will be overthrown? And how many countries have we been involved in that regard?
I know that we neutralized Nicaragua in 1989, and the way we finally did that wasn't through the Contra effort. The way we did it was we intimidated and coerced President Daniel Ortega to the point that he agreed to have elections. We were tasked to go in. We tried every route that we could through Contra efforts, through negotiations through our embassies to get Mr. Ortega to have elections. Then finally, Vice President Bush said, "Okay, boys." And he was the ultimate man at the time in 1989. I want him neutralized. So we went in, and the intimidation was used on Ortega. We went in, we told him what date we would assassinate his second cousin, who was a very good friend of his. We went in, we told him to put as many armies around that man that he wanted, but that man was going to die. That man died on that date. 2 weeks later, the president of Nicaragua announced that there would be free elections.
I guess I better not ask you how you did it, then. So we'll let that one slide. How tragic. How many times has this happened around the world?
18 that I'm aware of.
Involving national leaders of other countries?
Yes.
How many governments have we overthrown?
Overthrown or have control of?
Have control of. Well, same difference, isn't it?
No, not completely. You know, we give them a little levity.
Not much.
No, not much. I'd say about 15 that I'm aware of.
15 countries where we have control of. And in those 15 countries, how many instances and how many countries were involved in international trafficking of drug in one phase or another in which our leaders in this country profited from it?
Drugs or arms, all of them. That was many of the purposes.
That's the main reason for doing it, then.
That's correct.
So we go in, neutralize, control 15 countries that you know of in order to gain money and profit through drugs and arms. Does democracy matter? Does what the freedom for these people matter at all, as far as CIA is concerned?
Not to the elite.
Not to the elite. How about you fellas in the ranks?
We just have a job to do. You know, I would do my job as long as it didn't involve U.S. personnel. I would do my job. I had no problem with providing neutralization contracts on anyone outside of the U.S.
Okay, Chip, that's fine. Except there is going to come a day, and there probably already has come a day, and you and I both know it's already happened, where you've had to neutralize an American citizen on many occasions, right?
Not me, but it has been done.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Not you, but there have been others who have done this.
And, Ted, you know, it doesn't matter. Someone will always be out there to do it because
right.
They pay a lot of money to do it. We were paid $25,000 to $50,000 per mission.
Okay, so you're an operative, then you're not a CIA agent, an official, quote, on-the-roll agent?
As an agent, yes.
Okay, so you got a bonus out of this?
You bet.
Okay, folks, we'll be back in just a few minutes. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report.
Join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. or in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And we're back. My guest today is Chip Tatum, 25-year CIA deep cover agent. Chip, we have 15 countries that we've, quote, neutralized, that you're aware of, primarily for the purpose of arms and drugs. You mean to tell me we have 14 other Iran-Contras?
Probably more than that. We were pretty compartmentalized in all of our operations. And let me qualify something I said just a minute ago. As a member of OSG, we didn't report any longer to our originating agency. In other words, if I was on an OSG mission, I wouldn't report directly to the CIA any longer. I would report only to my OSG commander. There was occasions where out of OSG we were tasked to, like on one occasion I was tasked to Defense Intelligence Agency to go interview a person in Honduras by the name of Ellis McKenzie. Some of you may know that name out there. This was in 1989. Ellis McKenzie was one of the AKAs that Barry Seal used to use. And when we found that a guy named Ellis McKenzie was calling in, we wanted to say, who's that? What's this? Seal's dead. When we got down there, we found Ellis McKenzie was actually one of Seal's employees, and Seal had used his name when he was dealing with the Colombians. McKenzie was trying to implicate Colonel Castro of the Honduran Air Force, who was one of our people, in some independent drug running, and we wanted to find out if Castro was indeed involved in that. So that was one of the purposes of that. But we were attached to different agencies, and our reports would be masked to that agency and truthful to our OSG, too.
Okay, are you talking about, I understand a number of the gentlemen have been assigned officially to the Department of Energy, and when they had an assignment, they'd pull them out of the Department of Energy and send them on their way. Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah. Sure. Or proprietary companies, you know. So I know some who were, there could be people tasked to the Board of Elections of a particular state. Who knows, you know.
So sometimes the state agencies were involved then?
Absolutely.
And how about city and county?
City, county, and private. The good thing about the National Security Decision Directives that came out in the 80s, signed by President Reagan, was that under the Special Situation Group and Operational Subgroups, we had the opportunity to utilize civilian assets also. So we would set up civilian proprietary companies, utilize those companies. I know one company that I had up in upstate New York, in Watertown, New York, during the construction of Fort Drum, the 10th Mountain Division. We were there to oversee, to investigate, and to look into these companies, look into the engineers, see if they were doing anything, see if they were bugging the buildings, you know, all kinds of things. But we worked through a proprietary company, and I was supplied with a $250,000 signature line of credit. I could walk into Key Bank and on any given day take out $250,000 cash. That was set up by Henry Hyde.
Henry Hyde, the congressman from Illinois.
That's the man.
I've heard his name now for years, Chip, but I've never gone public with that information because I didn't feel like I should because it was third hand. I had no direct knowledge. You have direct knowledge of this about Henry Hyde?
I have direct knowledge. He set up the accounts for us. Everything was done through an attorney out of upstate New York by the name of Whitaker. He set up the corporations for the proprietary companies.
And, folks, Henry Hyde is a U.S. congressman from, I think, Chicago area, isn't he?
Illinois somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. And very, very prominent in Washington, D.C. And if you will follow some of his bills that he's introduced, you will see that they're New World Order from the beginning to the end. Of course, they've got enough on him that they could send him up to jail for years if they wanted to, which is one of the techniques they use on a regular basis. If somebody gets out of line, they set him up, send him off to jail, then they're discredited. Right, Chip?
I know that's true.
Yeah, you know that. We're going to get into that later on, one of these other shows. Okay. Now, is there anything else you want to mention about the Pegasus group before we move on?
I don't think so. I think Pegasus is alive. Pegasus is out there, and people need to be aware. Beware of the white horse.
Well, the trouble is, you can be aware, but you won't know because they can come in on you in the middle of the night and do just about anything to you that they want to. Of course, they're pretty discreet, though, aren't they?
We don't, you know. When we neutralize, we use compound poisons and so forth that imitate heart attacks and don't show up. So, you know, neutralizations and assassinations aren't
blatant. Sometimes they are. Sometimes we'll use a South African to kill the Sweden leader or something like that.
Yeah, and you're talking about that mistake that they made up in Sweden here several years ago.
Right.
Do you want to go into that now, as long as
no.
you brought it up?
No, I don't think so.
Well, I understand there's certain things that you don't want to discuss, and we won't discuss them. Okay, let's go back to your training now. How did they recruit you? Where did they pick you out of a special class of special forces, or what?
I had many times, in 1971, I was on a classified mission in Cambodia. I was a new recruit. I'd been in the wrong place at the right time. I'd been through Special Forces training. As an Air Force combat controller, we were sent through several TDYs to Bragg and Benning and received quite a bit of training, including NBC training, E&E training, POW training. As an ex-prisoner of war in Vietnam, I was recovering in Clark Air Force Base, Philippines, and the person who had briefed the mission along with General Haig in 1971, Haig had come over from Washington. Mr. Peepers had come over from Washington and another CIA type.
Peepers being Bill Colby.
Bill Colby. And when the mission was over and there were two survivors, the two survivors, from what I understand, also Chuck, the other survivor, was we were recruited then into the CIA.
And what did who approached you? Not Hager or Colby, surely.
Colby debriefed me.
Colby himself, head of the CIA? He was station chief then, though.
He was station chief over in Saigon at the time,
right,
the Phoenix
yeah.
program. And I worked for Colby, and he opconned all of my, was under operational control of all of my military assignments, so I was sent back to TDY over to him, working, as a matter of fact, I still have one set of orders that sent me TDY in support as a communications specialist to Air America. I did a lot of work. Jumped in a lot of zones trying to move downed aircraft, downed Air America pilots, downed military pilots who were where we weren't, into safe zones to have them picked up.
Well, now, back in those days, Colby was the one who initiated the, I don't know what the code word would be, the program to go in behind the enemy lines and assassinate the civilian leaders, right, in Vietnam?
Well, no, Colby took over that was the Phoenix program.
Uh-huh.
Colby took that over from someone else who had set that up. You know, the problem with the Phoenix program, and let me
okay,
say...
time for a quick break. Be right back, folks. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report.
Join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. Or in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And my guest today is Chip Tatum, 25-year CIA deep cover agent. We start talking about Operation or Phoenix program, Chip.
Right. You know, the biggest problem, the Phoenix program was designed to... alleviate North Vietnamese and Chinese leaders who were running the show, you know. Get rid of the commanders. You'll get rid of communication, get rid of the commanders. You'll get rid of the problem.
Well, it was very effective, certainly, wasn't it?
Absolutely. But the big problem we had with that is many of the people who were running the local intelligence networks, remember how I explained it just a little while ago as in OSG, each operative or each agent would have their own operatives that would work around them. We would set up our own network. Well, that was the same back during the Pegasus days or during the Phoenix days, but we utilized a lot of military personnel who were special ops guys, who were special forces, you know, and primarily officers. And not to say anything about officers, because I were one. Many of the officers didn't have the credentials and the training that was needed to be able to go out and set up a intelligence network. Many of them were what you call ticket punchers, trying to get their way promoted through the ranks and shooting for the star. So the intelligence networks that they set up weren't viable networks. they weren't able to effectively rate the information that was coming in. So a lot of the information we got was bogus, and assassinations were performed on that bogus information, so we killed a lot of innocent civilians.
Tragic, very tragic. Let's go back to your training. So Colby and Haig recruited you. Colby himself debriefed you. What kind of training did you receive after from there on? Did you go back to Washington, D.C. for training, or where?
Went to Washington for training. Went to later years, I went over to Glenn County, Glencoe, for training.
Where's Glenn County?
Glencoe, Georgia, southern Georgia.
Is that where they have the big base, training base for all, a number of agencies, including INS?
And FBI, right.
And FBI. I didn't know FBI was down there. We used to be in Quantico.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they move a lot of them over there for advanced training. That's an advanced training area.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about your training details.
Well, I know if I leave my key, if I lose my key, I can get in.
Okay.
A lot of electronics training. On my side, assault training, understanding that my primary mission later was to get people in and get people out. I trained in Houston Airport, Houston ATC. I worked with maintenance personnel and radar systems. I trained on through the EC3A Advanced or Airborne Command Post and the AWACS program, so that I understood what they were looking at, what the controllers were looking at, so that I knew how to get around what they were looking at. I knew how to fool the system, and there's a way to fool each system. But you have to train with them. You have to be there. You have to be up there understanding what they're looking at to know how to fool them. The fact is, you can't beat that electronic beam that's coming down to you. But you have to fool that operator into thinking that you're not what you are.
Okay, so what you're saying is you had a way or a technique of bypassing, avoiding being picked up on radar. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And in order to what? To drop drugs or to drop a man out for an assignment or a mission or what?
Following 1985 and the Iran-Contra thing, they couldn't get any more drugs on board my aircraft. That was one of the criteria I told my handler, Mr. Colby, at the time in the OSG. I told Bill, there's no way in the world you're ever going to put anything on board my aircraft like that again.
Well, now, you discovered you had drugs on there by accident because they were labeled medical supplies, right?
That's correct.
And tell us about that incident.
Well, on February 26, 1985, I was tasked to fly a couple guys, a couple pilots from San Lorenzo, Italy, or San Lorenzo, Honduras, to El Paraiso, a Contra camp in Honduras. Those pilots' names were Buzz Sawyer and Bill Cooper. A year later, the world would hear of those names, along with Gene Hassenfoss. They were the pilots that were killed when the Hassenfoss C-123 went down in Nicaragua, which pretty well started the Iran-Contra investigation. I flew them into the Contra camp. While we were there, I was given a cooler marked vaccine, a large cooler. We put it on board the aircraft. I took the vaccine cooler to San Pedro Sula, as instructed, and I took the two passengers there. They were to get on a C-130 or a 123. I don't recall what they were.
Well, C-130 is that huge airplane, right?
It is the four turboprops. Uh-huh. Yeah, C-123 looks like a baby C-130 with only two props.
Right.
They were to get on board and go back to El Salvador, Elipango, where they were out of. But the cooler, as I was unloading it, fell and came open. The seal broke on it. So in looking, I noticed that it contained all kinds of bags of crystalline powdery substance. So I, being who I was and understanding what was probably going on at that point, I tasted it and it numbed my tongue, and it was cocaine. There was over 110 kilos of cocaine in that large cooler.
What would that have been worth on the street?
110 kilos, maybe about, back then, 15, 20, 25,000 a kilo.
Yeah, okay.
And, we flew over 4 tons of that stuff while I was there. So I started marking on the back of my flight plan. I told North, I went back to Washington Switch. I called Washington Switch from Pomerol Air Base, and I told my handler, Ollie North, I told him, I said, what the hell's going on here? And he said, these are fruits of war. It was, the Contras got it from the Sandinistas.
who are funding their war effort by selling drugs. And that cooler is bound for the world courts as evidence against these people. Well, then I talked to Major Rodriguez, who was Felix Rodriguez, my handler, local in Honduras, and he said the same thing.
Okay, I'll be right back. Hold your thoughts. We'll be right back. Dolly Norris and Rodriguez, Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report. No question about it. We're back, folks. My guest today is Chip Tatum. We're wrapping up about three or four more minutes, Chip, time does run quite rapidly. Chip, we have a caller on the line. You want to know if you ever flew any black helicopters?
Task Force 160, yeah.
You did?
Absolutely.
And when? Where?
As a matter of fact, there's a picture of me standing in front of one of the black helicopters on the beach of Grenada. On the beachhead, we flew Task Force 160, flew in. Those helicopters weren't in Army inventory, the MD-500 Defenders. We had no markings on them. Sure.
Yeah. Well, what would your mission be on a black helicopter?
Well, depending on what you were, we were special ops. We were supporting FBI anti-terrorist teams. We were supporting all kinds of anti-terrorist teams. And, you know, what we did in the United States is our night flights in black helicopters, we're practicing night vision goggle flight techniques. If you're not used to flying at treetop level with night vision goggles on, the goggles have no depth. You have no depth perception with them, so you have to practice extensively, log hours and hours to be able to fly safely and effectively.
How many of these black helicopters do we have in the United States?
It's hard to say how big a 160th is now, but I think they're in three different locations. I'd say probably about 150.
And what are the locations?
I don't want to give that out.
Okay.
It used to be Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Okay. All right, well, if I ask any questions that, you know, you don't want to answer, I don't have any problem with you saying you can't answer that.
There are certain things that I still can't answer, you know.
Yeah, I understand. I've going to put you down pretty good this first hour anyway, so.
I'd like to say, Ted, that that first flight on March 20th, or on February 26th, where we found the cocaine,
right.
I started logging all that information on the back of the flight plans and have since been able to publish those flight plans in the Tatum Chronicles.
And Tatum Chronicles are available where? How?
At 1-800-201-7892. That's 800-201-7892, extension 58. We sent a copy to Ms. Reno, she still says today that there is no evidence out there showing that there was ever any involvement.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
I think that's a standard statement by her. I think she made that same statement today about some political campaign contribution.
Oh, yes, yes. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Well, we know how that goes. And we just have a couple more minutes, Chip, but we started talking about Ali North and Rodriguez. Is that his name?
Felix Rodriguez, that's
right. Uh-huh. And those are your local handlers, and they said that, oh, no, those are for the international court, did you say?
That's what they said. And,
drugs, yeah.
I flew over 4 tons of that stuff, and I'd like to see the warehouse for the courts that stuff's sitting in today.
Well, what does that mean, though, for the international court?
For the world courts, I think that they were going to file charges against the Ortega-led government. According to them, that's what they were going to do. However, my many missions into Contra camps, I found that the Contras were indeed manufacturing the cocaine themselves under the direction of a man brought up from Colombia by North, and his name was Navarro. He flew as a lieutenant colonel, but his real name was Ramon Navarro, and he would be assassinated just prior to the Noriega trial.
Well, if anybody knows too much about any one item, they do a nice job of assassinating them or dying. They die of a heart attack, or they're arkansided, otherwise known as suicided, or they die in a plane crash.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to, we'll just talk about Ali North and the rest of them in this Iran. So you're talking about Iran-Contra.
That's what I'm talking about, Iran-Contra. I think Mr. Nice is the one who came up with that
name. Okay, folks, second hour coming up. Ted Gunderson
Intelligence
Report. You've
been listening to the Ted Gunderson Intelligence Report. To contact us, write the Ted L. Gunderson Intelligence Report, P.O. Box 18000-259, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89114.
To the Ted Gunderson Intelligence Report with former FBI Chief Ted L. Gunderson.
to join in on the conversation with Ted. Call 1-970-587-5171. Or in the Denver metropolitan area, it's 1-303-654-9924. And now, here's Ted.
And good day to all you beautiful people around the world and United States of America, from the East Coast to the West Coast, Canada, Mexico. Yes, we had a call from Costa Rica and from South Wales. And hope you folks over in England are listening to the show by shortwave. And also, good day to you folks in the rest of Europe, Asia, South America, and Africa. We have an exciting show for you today. By popular demand, actually my demand, I brought back Gene Tatum, Chip Tatum, who is a Vietnam Special Forces Air Combat Controller, a 25-year CIA deep cover agent, a U.S. Army pilot flying classified missions during the U.S. invasion of Grenada, Iran Contra pilot flying cocaine shipments labeled as medical supplies, a member of the ultra-secret international G7-run Pegasus hit team. This is the extraordinary story of Gene Chip Tatum, and I'm reading from a magazine that's published not in the United States, of course, but in, where, Chip, in Australia?
I believe it's published in Australia, and an additional piece is soon to come out in a magazine published in England. X Factor magazine, there will be a large piece. Now, the Nexus magazine published in Australia, there's a second part to that piece that comes out in the next issue.
Be sure to keep me informed on that, Chip.
I certainly will.
And, folks, you will get this news about CIA illegal operations from the foreign press. You won't get it from the mainstream press, and you will receive this news here on the Ted Gunderson Intelligence Report. Now, I had Chip come back deliberately because when I saw the amount of information he could furnish to the public, he was on the show on April the 23rd, and at that time he discussed Operation Black Rock, which was a raid on the Cambodian airport. And bear in mind, the Cambodians were our allies. We discussed the Pegasus group, and that's the secret group within the CIA, the spies on the spies. This is we're talking about the 23rd now. We talked about going to Italy looking for POWs, and he was found two POWs there, as I recall. Doesn't know what's happened to them. They came back through the communists into... Did they actually come into Italy, Chip?
No, I was based out of Italy. That's where I had my secure lines at the Aviano Air Base. I would report back to Aviano on every Monday to call the DCI.
Where did you find these two POWs?
They were... I received information that they were in the Romania area, communist bloc countries.
So these are Vietnam veterans?
That's correct.
Okay, and remember, folks, our country says, hey, there's no boys left over, there's no POWs, we've accounted for them, and here Chip Tatum has an admission as a CIA agent on a mission, located two of them. How many more times do we have to have the government lie to us? And then we talked, of course, about treason, about Johnson and Bush on the 23rd show, and then, folks, we just wrapped up an hour on shortwave, not shortwave, but on the satellite station. We talked about the National Security Directive 3 back in the 1980s, early 1980s. We talked quite in detail about the Pegasus group, spies upon spies, about how the OSS after World War II was disbanded and it became the CIA. And we talked about the various missions that were accomplished by the Pegasus group and by the CIA. We talked about the Archer mission, team assassinations. We neutralized, or I'd say neutralized is the word you use, Chip, 15 countries around the world. For the purpose of drugs and arms. And we'll talk some more about that on this hour. We talked to Chip about his training, 1971. He was in a mission in Cambodia. He was recruited by Colby himself. Colby debriefed him. And we talked a little bit about, on the first hour, the Phoenix program. This is a program that where the CIA folks go behind the lines and assassinate civilian leaders. And we talked a little bit about how, in many instances, they were innocent individuals. We discussed his training in Washington, D.C. and Georgia, and his task of he flew two pilots into Central America on one occasion. And these were Sawyer? Yep.
Pardon me?
Who were the two pilots, Cooper and who else?
Sawyer,
yeah, I guess. Anyway, I just wanted to give you a wrap-up. The question was asked at the end of the last hour, if Chip had ever flown black helicopters. He said, yes, he has flown black helicopters, and they do exist. Were these helicopters Russian helicopters?
No, they were. We had MD-500 Defenders. We had and we had Black Hawks. Then there were also Apaches available to the So
why were they black? There was no writing on them. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Isn't there regulations? Do you have to have writing on the airplane?
Well, there's writing on it. You know, it's black paint, and so we stenciled the U.S. Army in black on it.
So it's painted black, and you put black on the black lettering on it, then. Is that it?
Correct.
Well, then they didn't disobey any regulations. I'm surprised they even bothered to waste the paint.
For every rule, for every law, there's a way around it. That's
right. Now, folks, we had Chip on the 23rd. I could see he has a wealth of information. We've invited him back for five straight shows, 2 hours each, a total of 12 hours. And if you want to obtain an audio copy of this show, you can get 12 hours interview with Chip. And this is, without all the commercials, $49.95 to American Freedom Network. I'm sure they'll give you the address someplace along the way here. Or you can call 800-205-6245. This is the second show with Chip. We will have four more after this. And for a copy of all of these shows, audio copy, get them, copy them, make them, and send them to your friends. We need to educate the American people as to what's going on behind the scenes in this country. For 12 hours, $49.95, call 800-205-6245. You know, Chip, I understand that it's necessary to have a CIA and it's necessary to have an FBI. But, you know, it's not necessary to go out and kill innocent people, as far as I'm concerned. And they are not above the law. They should not be above the law. And this really perturbs me. You mentioned on the first show about you found that a box dropped and you found something labeled medicine that was actually drugs. Okay, we'll get back into that in just a minute, folks. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report. Hark, I hear music.
To join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. Or in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And I guess we're back, folks. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report. And I have Chip Tatum with me, 25-year veteran, CIA. Who has now come forth, and we'll get into more details on that in just a minute, but we have Pete from Minneapolis on the line. Hi, Pete.
Hi. How are you, Ted?
Fine. How's the weather up there?
It's kind of gloomy, a little chilly up here, I guess.
Usually is chilly up there in Minnesota.
Yeah.
I used to spend my summer vacations in Hackensack. There's a lake there near Lake Bemidji. And
oh, really?
So
yeah, I know where that is.
Oh, yeah. The mosquitoes are like hummingbirds.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, unbelievable. Pete, you have a question for Chip Tatum.
Yeah, how do you know what he's saying? I mean, I mean no disrespect, but how do you know what he's saying is true? And, because I think one of the number one priorities of this other, this group, conspirators or whatever, would be to eliminate him,
Well, he's got an answer for that, but before he answers it, I'd like to point out this Pegasus article that I mentioned. Did you hear the first hour of the show?
I heard part of it, not all of it.
Okay, this Pegasus article, April and May 1997, is well documented at the back, and also he has his flight plans, and he's had appropriate notations and appropriate documentation. You want to give us more details on that, Chip?
Well, it took about a year for the investigative reporters who started looking into this and their legal departments to be satisfied with my credentials.
You're talking about the article in Nexus.
That's correct. And not only there, I just went through a federal trial, and in the Classified Information Procedures hearing, there was no doubt, there was no... there's no way that my credentials could be, or that the government could deny them, because they're factual. I was for 25 years with them. Can't be denied. The reason that I'm not, that I'm in pretty safe ground, Pete, is simply because I've been around long enough to know that you need to keep an ace in the hole. I have that ace in the hole. I've promised the people in very high places that ace in the hole will keep them protected as long as I'm protected.
By the way, Pete, the information that he furnished has furnished to me cross-checks with other individuals who have been involved in these same type of activities and with whom I am personally involved, not as an agent or anything, but in the form of obtaining information from them. So Chip has been checked from A to Z and up and down all directions, and there's no question about this man's credibility.
Okay. One other quick question. What does your guest think of, you know, the current administration and the Chinese communist scandals, you know, fundraising and so forth?
Yeah, I was. I have.
I'll probably gonna hang up here, and I'll just listen in.
Okay, I was going to get into that. Not necessarily this hour. We have this these five shows, concluding the show today, plus the sixth one we had on the 23rd of April.
Oh, okay.
That was one of the areas I was going to get into. But as long as you've asked the question, let's get into it right now. Go ahead, Chip.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Pete.
As a prisoner of war in Cambodia.
Hello.
Hello, Ted.
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm here.
I'm here too. I guess we have a problem. Okay, they cut it off. Go ahead.
As a prisoner of war in Cambodia, some of the teams that were assigned to interrogate us included Chinese officers. I watched in horror as a 19-year-old boy, as a Chinese major, skinned our captain alive and crucified him because he found a St. Christopher's cross on his neck. Bayonets were held, knives were held to our heads, requiring us to watch this. I watched our platoon leader suffer over days and die.
Tortured?
Tortured by a Chinese officer. My feeling about any administration that would go into contracts with the Chinese, do I need to say it?
You were also tortured by a Chinese officer.
Yep. Yes, I was.
And you want to tell us about that?
Well, I was beaten. When the captain was killed and skinned alive, I had, in one of our escape attempts, I had hurt the Chinese officer. So in my escape attempt, when we were recaptured, my nose was broken during one of the beatings, and the medical officer took the skin of our dead captain and stuffed it up my nose. And he told me that as I breathed, I would taste and smell of death.
You know, skinning alive is a practice that's also used by the Satanists, satanic movement in this country and around the world, I guess. I don't want to go into details of that. But they, in the ones I've heard about, they started with the toe and the foot, is that right?
That's right. And, yeah, any of the appendages.
Yeah, and then they move on up. Mm-hmm. Tragic, horrible death, terrible thing.
By one of America's heroes.
Beg your pardon?
Suffered by one of America's true heroes, that
yes.
Young captain, special forces officer.
Yes, and we have many heroes out there, Chip, and that's what perturbs me about the CIA drug operation and killing of innocent people, assassinations by the CIA, and we have people like Henry Hyde of Chicago, a congressman from Chicago, keeping the record of the black ops by this agency, and we have people in Washington, D.C. giving orders out to do this and do that are not in our best interest or the best interest of our country, and we have this phony Bill Clinton talking about, worried about tobacco. Our youth is smoking tobacco, and he, time for a quick break. We'll be right back, folks. I thought I was on a roll, but I'll get back to it.
And now, here's Ted.
And we're back. My guest today is Chip Tatum, 25-year veteran of the CIA. I was on a roll, Chip, and the music came along, and what I was saying was, that Bill Clinton is making a big issue out of our youth smoking cigarettes, and that is a problem, I'll have to agree to that, but at the same time, he sanctions and allows drugs to be brought in by the ton load into this country today, and that could be stopped overnight if he took certain precautions, but there are too many politicians involved, too many of them have been compromised through drugs and sex, and there are too many bureaucrats involved now. There's no question in my mind that we have been infiltrated, this country at all levels of the government, big time. How do you feel about that, Chip?
I think you're dead on, Ted.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that you're dead on that.
Oh, I know I am. Chip, I was going to get into another area. Let's talk about in the first hour we talked about Henry Hyde and how he keeps a track of black ops by the CIA and the drugs and so forth. Tell us about Iran-Contra. You were obviously involved in it, and you have information about Ollie North, and you have information about other leading figures in this country. Where did you first realize what was going on? When you dropped that medical box and it split open and there's cocaine in it?
Well, in that arena, yes. That's when I first knew. I had no doubt what was going on. When I landed and made my call back to Washington Switch and told Mr. North what was going on, and his response was that these are the fruits of war. They're going to world courts. You know, we're going to get the Sandinistas for doing this, for shipping drugs into our country. Well, you know, that's the apple pie response, you know, but when it comes right down to it, Mr. North doesn't know the meaning of Semper Fidelis. Let me read what one of the items that I wrote on the back of one of the flight plans when I landed, simply because I knew that we needed to start documenting what was going on for the protection of my flight crews. These men were military men. They weren't agency. They weren't intelligence assets of any sort. They were innocent bystanders, like you have talked about, that we were utilizing. We needed the cover of Medevac to fly the missions under humanitarian support.
Explain Medevac.
Medical evacuation is is just that, medical evacuation of wounded and supplies by via helicopters. We flew OD Green helicopters with big red crosses on them, so that under the Geneva Convention, we wouldn't be fired upon, and we were a humanitarian aircraft. We weren't to supply any weapons. We weren't to supply anything other than humanitarian support in medevac aircraft.
Well, now, you had markings on those planes and also on the black helicopter flown in the past. It was painted, the helicopters are black, and the painting on the helicopter was U.S. Army, also in black, so they were able to comply with all the regulations that way. Keep going.
That's correct, but the medevac aircraft, it was an actual medevac group that received the tasking to go in there. We knew ahead of time who would be tasked to go TDY in there, and I was sent to that unit, to PCS, Permanent Change the Station, to infiltrate that unit so that I could be the command pilot on that mission.
Okay.
When I landed, I made notes. And let me.
Where did you land, Chip?
Pardon me?
Where did you land?
Back at Pomerol Air Base. That's in Honduras. That was the Air Force Academy of the Hondurans, and that's where we were basing out of. On 9th of April, we landed, and this is what was written. We flew into a small village 40 kilometers east-northeast of Ocotal in Nicaragua. Rodriguez was there with the Contra leader, Enrique Bermudez, when we arrived. We walked through the camp, which was still being cleared and organized. Four fuel pods, with their tops cut off, were sitting outside a large military tent. Several tactical fuel balls were located next to the pods. Rodriguez told the air crew that this was a Sandinista base that was captured. I noted that all the equipment, the GP large tent, the fuel pods, and the tactical fuel balls were U.S. made. And inside the tent were several women packaging cocaine. When we left, we carried 410-quart white coolers marked medical supplies to San Lorenzo, Honduras, dropped them off to a civilian C-123, and returned to base.
This is written on your flight plan?
In 1985.
On the back of your flight plan?
On the back of the flight plan.
How many such reports do you have?
There's 110 pages of this.
Okay, so that's your documentation.
That's pretty darn good documentation.
That's the best. And what have you done with this documentation?
I've published it.
Gave it to Janet Reno?
Janet Reno has a copy of it. As a matter of fact, I even sent it to a man named Lee Reddick, who's in charge of the public integrity section of the Department of Justice. And Mr. Reddick's response was unbelievable. He said, let me read his response when he received this. This office is responsible for investigation and prosecution
of
public
right
officials.
Back,
we regret we cannot assist you in this matter.
Time for a quick break. Be right back, folks.
To join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. Or in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And we're back. My guest today is Chip Tatum, 25-year CIA deep cover agent. Chip, on this, we were talking about Ollie North. Tell us more about Ollie North. And now you had direct contact with him, didn't you?
Oh, blood and guts himself, you bet. That's what he likes to refer to himself as.
Well, is he really a blood and guts man, or is that all up front?
I think that's quite a bit of fun. I think he was a warrior. He was placed in a position that greed got the best of him. However, his Vietnam days, he was a warrior. Those are gone, and he can never relive those days as much as he would like to. I know that on one occasion in one of the camps, let me read you what my medic wrote. This is on 18th of March. He said, arrived at San Lorenzo, arrival had not been coordinated with ground personnel. At the helipad, the emergency vehicles were not waiting. There was no answer on medevac frequency 4510 or on their 4910. Confusion on ground causing ground time 15 minutes. Medic's duties were compounded when Mr. North fainted. Our medic was working on the chest of a particular Contra soldier. We had two wounded Contra soldiers in the camp that we went into in El Paraiso because of artillery fire during the night, many wounded children. When we saw that there was a piece of wood, a sliver, in the chest of this man, we tore his clothing open. Mr. North wanted to leave. He had other villages to get to, but we were the primary medevac for three countries also. I had three jobs. We worked for the CIA out of the embassy. I worked for Pegasus Group, and I worked for the Army as a medevac pilot, so I was juggling quite a bit. When North came over to see what the delay was, and he asked Specialist McDonald, my medic, McDonald looked up at him kind of disgusted, trying to explain to him that he had to save this, work on this man to save his life. Then we tore the clothing open, and the chest wound was wide. The chest cavity was wide open, and McDonald grabbed in to pull the wood out that was laying on top of the heart area, and North's knees buckled and fell over.
Well, how was he involved in the Iran-Contra situation as far as the money was concerned, and the organization of it?
Well, North is the person who actually, you know, you hear a lot about the North camps in Honduras for the Contras. The North camps were named the North camps not because they were necessarily in the northern part of the country, but because North set them up. North was in charge of setting those camps up. Enrique Bermudez was in charge of protecting those camps. And Ramon Navarro was in charge of the cocaine operations in those camps. It was, the Three Musketeers there. They were producing out of each camp about, and there were five of them that were producing cocaine, about 500 kilos a week. It wasn't a large operation, but it was large enough that the paste that was sent to them from Ramon Navarro's contacts in the Medellin cartel wasn't supplying paste fast enough, so they were actually flying bales of leaves up from Peru.
So Ollie North set these five camps up 500 kilos per week. How many years were they in service?
They were in service when I got there, and they were setting up new ones, too. 159th Aviation Battalion out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Super Chinooks were flying in the fuel pods and equipment, dropping bladders of acetone and jet fuel into the area.
Well, where was North physically located at this time, Washington, D.C., or down there in Central and South America?
He was in Washington, D.C., but he did make several trips into South America, as did Vice President Bush, which wasn't brought out at the time. Mr. Bush was there on April 12th, but no one heard that.
Down at these camps?
That's correct.
April 12th of what year?
1985.
And he was vice president then, wasn't he?
That's correct.
And how did the money flow on the organizational structure of the drugs, the money, et cetera? Do you have any idea on that?
I was a pilot down there. I don't know how the money flowed. I know many of the drugs went to either Ilopango Air Base in El Salvador, or they went up to Panama. I did have the occasion to fly several members to El Acatal to a meeting of this cartel. I call it the Olympic cartel because of the proportions of what they were doing. Several of the members that I flew to this meeting in El Acatal, here are the people who were there. It was General Noriega, Mike Harari, who was a retired Mossad agent assigned to General Noriega, Felix Rodriguez, Joe Fernandez, who was the CIA station chief in Costa Rica, General Gustavo Alvarez, who was the U.S. or the Honduran Army Chief of Staff, and a guy named William Barr, who represented the assets of this enterprise.
Now, wait a minute. William Barr used to be Attorney General of the United States.
He later became, under his boss, George Bush, the Attorney General of the United States. That's correct.
That's right. He replaced Thornburg, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe so.
Well, isn't that interesting? Well, you know, let me tell you about William Barr very briefly, because I don't want to get into my story, because I've told it before on the air. But I was able, with John DeCamp, we've infiltrated an organized child kidnapping ring in the Midwest, and I personally sent a letter to William Barr when he was Attorney General and told him about that ring. I personally sent a letter to the FBI, told him about this ring. I said, don't come to me and ask me questions about it because it's third hand. Come to me and I'll give you my sources and the names of people who can document this information. And William Barr wrote back and said, my sources are not credible. He didn't know who my sources were. And I was totally ignored, not only by the Mr. William Barr, but also by the FBI. And that's another one of my bones I have to pick with the FBI. So go on with your story. So we have Vice President Bush, we have Ollie North, we have William Barr involved in the drug operation. It's that simple, isn't it?
We have Amiram Nir Mossad, Mike Harari Mossad.
Yeah, we have the Mossad agents also. Well, Mossad and the CIA are basically one and the same, aren't they?
Yeah, they're not one and the same. When you think of
I'm exaggerating, Chip.
When you think of the OSG operating realm, yes, we're an international. Our intelligence is now an international intelligence society. It's not just a U.S. intelligence society.
We're talking about OSG operations subgroup, which is the same thing as Pegasus.
That's correct.
And let's go back just a minute. I meant to ask you this. We were talking about training on the first hour. When you went through your training sessions, did you have FBI agents there with you?
Oh yeah, FBI. We went to normal training in. This was in Glencoe. Sure. I also had the opportunity to travel to Israel and do some training in Israel. So
we're talking about, how about DEA and ATF? Were they involved in some of this training with you?
Not in the training, no.
Uh-huh.
We did support the ATF and DEA in a couple missions that I flew, but that was it.
Did they train you as a professional assassin?
Yes.
Okay, we won't go into details on that. We're talking about Ollie North and Bush, okay, but you do not know how the money flow went, do you?
Well, I know that there were three legs where money was flowing.
Okay, we'll talk about the money when we get back. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report, no question about it.
Eric Cederstrom for the Patriot Trading Group. Are you paying huge commissions to pay for your gold and silver brokers, Mercedes-Benz? Are you getting lightning-fast delivery and fair prices? Then call Patriot Trading Group at 1-800-951-0592. The Patriot Trading Group offers all forms of gold and silver, shipped and delivered in the utmost privacy at the most competitive prices in the country. Nobody does it better. Call 1-800-951-0592. We'll be happy to quote you prices or send you out a free brochure, no questions asked. It's a no-brainer. We also offer full-service, penalty-free gold and silver IRA conversions. Believe me, it pays to compare. Why pay more? Here at the Patriot Trading Group, we'll treat you like we'd like to be treated ourselves. You have my word on it.
And we're back, folks.
To join in on the conversation with Ted, call 1-970-587-5171. Or in the Denver metropolitan area, 1-303-654-9924. And now, back to Ted.
And my guest today, Chip Tatum, 25-year CIA deep cover agent for the CIA, that is, of course. Chip, we had a caller that wants to know if you know anything about Colby's death.
No, I was in prison at the time of Colby's death. I had written him a letter about 3 weeks prior to his death, and never received a response from him.
Are you aware of the details of his death?
I'm aware that he died in a canoeing accident. I'm aware that the door of his home was left open and his computer was accessed. You know, I'd flown Bill Colby on several other occasions in under the OSG. One thing Colby was always meticulous about was the requirement to wear our water wings whenever we were on overwater flights in rotary wing aircraft. He was meticulous about us wearing those safety vests, almost to the point that you would think that he had some fear of water. And from what I understand from his wife, he always wore his life vest when he went out canoeing. But he didn't have it on then, did he?
No, he did not. And furthermore, not only was the computer left on, and the door was open, but there was a partial meal on the table. And when Colby went out on his canoe or in the boat, he always put his flag up, his mariner's flag up. The flag was not up. And furthermore, he was very meticulous about not going out in his boat when there was a high wind and there was rough waters. And there were rough waters that particular night. You know, he's a good friend, or was a good friend of John DeCamp. John DeCamp is a good friend of mine. And I don't know how John feels, but I'm very comfortable saying that I think that he was murdered, assassinated.
I believe he was neutralized.
Neutralized. You used the word neutralized, I used the word murder. They're both the same when it comes to the CIA operation. You know, he was, I don't know if I can say this is for a fact, but I can tell you what I've been told. After up to 25 years after you serve in the CIA, you cannot write a book without the approval of the CIA, without them reviewing and editing it. And he was 3 months away from that period, and he was writing a book. Is that true, Chip?
That's true from the best of my knowledge, and I had even asked him if he would write the foreword to my book that I was getting ready to produce, or getting ready to publish. I was able to bypass that in a way, getting the approval from them, simply because I used my book in my federal trial, and a federal judge can overrule any classification. So,
and we're going to get into your trial probably in the next show, Chip. I don't think we're going to have time now.
Right.
And the way they set you up and sent you off to prison in order to discredit you. So let's talk about your book. Do you have a book coming out, and have you sold it yet, or what?
Well, I have the Tatum Chronicles, which are the flight plans that myself and my air crews documented all of the activities down there.
Have you sold the book yet to your publisher?
No.
Well, I have a book that I've published. It's how to locate anyone anywhere without leaving home.
Uh-huh.
And it's a good seller. It was published in 1989. And it's still selling. It's in its 10th printing, and I have a good agent. I'll be glad to refer you to my agent if you would like.
Well, that'd be great. This will be my first contact with an agent. I've just been free to do so since the 4th of April. So.
Oh, good. Well, I'll after the show's over, give me a call, or I'll call you. I have to call the station, first of all, and discuss something with them. And then I'll give you her name, and you can take it from there.
Hey, Ted,
by the way, my
caller. His name is Andy from California.
Andy from California has a call. Andy?
Yeah.
Hi, Andy.
How you doing, man?
Good. Where are you from, California?
Running Springs.
Where in the world is Running Springs?
It's between Big Bear and Lake Arrowhead.
Okay. I know the area, not too far from San Bernardino.
Right.
Andy, you have a question for Chip.
Yeah, Chip, do you know of any American generals who were complicit in the Iran-Contra affair besides Secord?
I know who signed my orders. It was a U.S. Army general who was the deputy director of intelligence to the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
How about Colin Powell? Was he ever seen or mentioned?
That was the man.
Oh, Colin Powell signed your orders. Okay.
Well, that gives you some hints, a few things, doesn't it, Andy?
That tells me quite a few people knew.
Of course.
All right, thank you much.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks for calling in.
All right, bye.
Chip, we're talking about your book. Are you going to expose all in your book, or are there certain things you have to hold back on?
Well, the Tatum Chronicles is just the flight plans and the documents which expose and are sufficient to receive an indictment on several people. The Operation Red Rock, which was our mission in Southeast Asia, I just finished that, as a matter of fact, about 3 days ago. I had written it in prison, and it just finished. It just came back from the typist.
And this is, I mean, if you're going to publish everything, then do you still have the advantage of having an insurance policy, so to speak? Or
I'm not going to publish everything.
Okay, and then what's to keep them from doing a 10-7 job on you? 10-7 is lingo for a law enforcement out of service.
Well, while I was in Jessup Federal Prison, I was approached by a person from the NSC and someone from the Federal Bureau of Prisons wanting to know what I had, if I would relinquish all this information that I had tucked away, simply because it could do so much harm to certain political figures if I were to be harmed. And I said, well, buddies, my advice to you is keep me safe.
Okay. So in other words, you're going to hold some things back then, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the NSC being the National Security Council, that is right out of the White House, folks. We discussed that on the first hour. Chip, I've done the same thing, by the way. I have 12 letters that are in a safety deposit box. If anything happens to me, those 12 letters go to some key people. It gives the head, the leaders of the satanic movement in this country, and it ties into some interesting individuals. And we have to do that in order to stay alive. Come right back, folks. Ted Gunderson, Intelligence Report.
Ted.
And we're back, folks. Our guest today is Chip Tatum, a 25-year veteran of the CIA. Folks, we are doing a six-part series, total of 12 hours, with Chip. I recognize the significance and the importance of getting him back on the show. He was on the show on the 23rd of April. And these 12 hours on audio will sell for $49.95. In order to obtain a set, call 800-205-6245. And, Chip, let's go back to Colin Powell. You say Colin Powell signed your orders?
As far as being able to move on the military side, someone had to be placed there for us to move in and out of the military, and that's the man who signed the orders.
Move in and out of the military. What does that mean? Military camps and fly airplanes for the military or what?
Sure. We had to be attached back into the active service. We had to move out of active service.
Oh, I see. In other words, this week you're a civilian, next week you're in the military.
That's correct.
And where was Colin Powell at the time he signed these orders?
Washington, D.C.
And what knowledge did he have of the operations you were involved in?
I have no idea. I just know that he was the man who reported to the Joint Chiefs as far as intelligence, and that's the man that all intelligence efforts went through.
Well, now, how about the intelligence on drug operations?
That's very positive. You know, I don't think, and let me qualify that, the United States military had no direct knowledge of what was going on there.
So you don't think the
United States military even put out a Twix because I was flying those aircraft for the CIA and Pegasus, and they said, hey, there's too many people with their hands in the pie here, too many people flying, or too many missions being flown by these medevac aircraft that are non-medevac missions.
Like with drugs.
Well, that's with something. They knew I was gone a lot. I was flying almost 100 hours a week, which is unheard of.
That's unbelievable. 100
yeah.
hours a week?
I was ragged. I was.
You must have been dragging your little fanny up and down that on that airplane now.
I was very tired. And, you know, it's good that we had other crew members that they didn't have to fly so many hours. Many of the missions that we'd fly for Pegasus, I'd leave the crew members aside and Rodriguez would hop in.
Well, but Powell did receive the intelligence information, passed it on to the chief of staff, right?
Powell said, yeah, that's correct, I suppose.
Yeah, and also, so in the information furnished in connection with the intelligence information, obviously he was furnished information about the drug operations, wasn't he?
You know, let me say that one thing that's very interesting about Mr. Powell, or General Powell, is during his stay and during the Gulf War, by the end of all that, the Marines were out of bullets. Where'd all the bullets go? Where are all the weapons that were stolen from stores or transferred from stores? Where did they go? Who knew about that?
Powell?
I believe so.
Well,
I believe that he and his buddy Bush were heavy into the arms trading business. Well, I know they were because our OSG-1 was the arms trading arm.
Well, I theorize, and I'm 100% confident that I'm right, we did not go in and destroy Baghdad in order for us to rearm them and make millions and millions of more dollars. Am I right or wrong? What do you think?
It's big business. It's
well,
big
you business. Know, the arms business is the biggest business in the world.
That's correct.
Money-wise, and in trillions of millions of dollars, maybe billions of dollars, I don't know about trillions, that and the drug, that's what makes the world go around. And these dirty politicians like George Bush and Bill Clinton's dirty. I mean, we've got him nailed down in Mena, Arkansas. There's more than one person can say that he had knowledge of the drug operation down there when he was governor.
Well, the arms business is what, and I'll talk about that possibly in a later show, is what caused the death of the Prime Minister of Sweden.
All right, we'll talk about that next show, folks. Tune in. Ted Gunderson's
Report. To contact us, write the Ted L. Gunderson Intelligence Report, P.O. Box 18000-259. Las Vegas, Nevada, 89114.
you can listen to this program and other American Freedom Network programs on the internet at www.amerifree.com, www.amerifree.com.
One of the many things people take for granted is this country's food supply. With today's economy and the lack of job security, no one's employment is certain. Layoffs occur at the rate of over 2,000 per day, and many times your paper investments are not readily available. In the real world, an investment into quality storage food is solid advice. A quality long-term food supply will store food for 12 years or more, and will always be at your fingertips when the unexpected occurs. Your family deserves the best, and you need to know that you are prepared. Knowing you will always have food will relieve a lot of your stress during tough times, such as layoffs or natural disasters. Call 1-800-205-6245. That's 1-800-205-6245 for all of the information on quality long-term storage food. 1-800-205-6245.
We are closed captioned for the politically impaired. KHNC Johnstown, KTMG, Deer Trail.